Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in central Iowa. Thank you for listening in. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today, together with Mr. Dennis Hart. Mr. Hart, we meet again.
Ursula, it is great to be here, though I have to admit I did not get all of my beauty sleep last night, and heaven knows I need it, because of that tremendous thunderclap that woke me up about 4:15 this morning, but I am happy to be here, thunder or no. It's good to be on the station with you.
Did you get scared?
Oh, no. No, I'm used to it, but it was a boomer, and of course I couldn't get right back to sleep. Now I'm thinking about, well, I'm going to be on Local Talk in only 2 hours and 45 minutes, so I'd better get ready. So you can see that I tried to put on my beauty face, but it didn't work.
Kind of makes you feel like Mother Nature's mad at you, huh, when it wakes you up like that.
I think Mama Nature's been mad at me for a long time. Now, I'm not sure why, but I'm going to have to look into that.
Well, she seems to be continuing a few temper tantrums throughout today. Showers and thunderstorms are likely throughout today and tonight, with the highest temperatures in the low 80s at the beginning of the week. Tonight should have great sleeping weather in the mid-60s. Tuesday may see scattered showers, but the sun will start coming back from there on and go right on through the weekend, and we can expect clear skies and sunny weather with temperatures going up into the high 80s. Sunday will be a beautiful day, and this will be great for KHOI's birthday party, which will include an outdoor concert from 4 to 7 p.m. More on that later in the show, or check out our website, khoifm.org. Dennis, before you get into the news, let me ask you a question. Do you know what isolated showers means?
It differs. Isolated showers mean that it could be sprinkling in one part of Ames or one part of any town and clear in the other. It means it's a very small area of showers, not a wide area. For example, today's thunderstorm was a tremendous area over much of central Iowa. Isolated showers means parts of town.
And what does widely scattered showers mean?
Virtually the same thing.
Oh. And so I looked this up last night because I really wanted to know, and there actually are percentages attached to this.
Oh, well, now you were tricking me. I didn't know about the percentages. I did not know this. Oh, boy.
Isolated showers is 10% to 25%.
I would have said 10% to 23%, but go ahead.
Widely scattered is 30 to 40%.
Uh-huh.
And scattered is 40 to 50%. And widespread is greater than 60%. So today, I think widely scattered showers is the prediction for our area.
And what percentage is that again without looking at it?
30 to 40.
Okay.
I didn't look.
There you go. All right. Now we all know. Well, let's start with our news summary, as we always do on Monday. And there was plenty of news around Iowa last week. We are going to begin with the story that's made news not just around our state, but unfortunately around the nation, the hunt for 20-year-old Molly Tibbetts, the University of Iowa student who vanished nearly 3 weeks ago. More than $260,000 now been raised as a reward for any information that helps lead to her return. Her mother told reporters Thursday that her family believes she is alive. She called on anyone who might have kidnapped her to release her. Molly disappeared from Brooklyn in central Iowa after jogging on the night of July 18th while she was dog-sitting at the home of her boyfriend and his brother. Those two men say they were away from the house the night she disappeared. Kevin Winkler of the Iowa Department of Public Safety said investigators had not identified the reason for Molly's disappearance and have not ruled out any possibilities. As many as 30 to 40 investigators are working the case, and more than 200 leads have been followed up on. Just yesterday, the body of a woman was found in rural Lee County in southeast Iowa, but authorities quickly said it was not Molly Tibbetts. And at one point last week, word came that authorities in Missouri had investigated a possible sighting of her at a truck stop in a town just northeast of Kansas City, and again, it was not Molly. Anyone with information that could help find Molly is urged to call Crime Stoppers. I'm going to give you the number twice. 800-452-1111. That number again, 800-452-1111. There was also word last week that the Marshall County Courthouse, which was severely damaged by the tornado that swept through Marshalltown several weeks ago, may have to stay closed to the public for a year or more. But it's not damage to the clock tower that will keep it closed. It's water damage. Three sprinkler systems gushed water through the east end of the building for more than an hour after that twister hit, and that's going to take time to fix. County staff and contractors have been drying out the building ever since then. Marshalltown officials are still figuring out the damage caused by that tornado. So far, here's what they found. 89 homes destroyed, 525 with major damage, 94 with minor damage, 54 others classified as affected. 7 businesses destroyed, 4 had major damage, 9 more had minor damage, 16 others were affected. Donations are flowing in to help with the Marshalltown tornado relief efforts. The biggest one so far, the one that the city's biggest employer announced it would donate late last week, JBS USA, which employs about 2,300 people at its pork facility in Marshalltown, said it would donate $1 million to help those employees and to support long-term rebuilding efforts and community recovery efforts. JBS processes meat in more than 100 countries and on 6 continents. Earlier this week, the Lennox Corporation, which suffered severe damage to its big plant in Marshalltown, pledged $500,000 to help rebuild parts of the city. There was other big news last week, including word that one of Iowa's main hospital and clinic systems notified more than a million of its patients that their personal information might have been breached. Unity Point officials said hackers used so-called phishing techniques to break into the company's email system. The company is based in West Des Moines and said the hackers might have obtained medical information, such as diagnoses and types of care, that was included in the emails. The hackers might also have obtained some patients' financial information. Also last week, Iowa District Court Judge Susan Christensen was chosen to be the next justice on the state Supreme Court. Governor Kim Reynolds made that announcement last Wednesday. Christensen will fill the vacancy created when Justice Bruce Zager retires from the 7-member court next month. Christensen is only the third woman in state history who will serve on Iowa's highest court. Also last week, Iowa Republican U.S. Senator Chuck Grassley asked a federal agency for information about a controversial resident death at the Timely Mission Nursing Home, Buffalo Center. 87-year-old Virginia Olthoff died in February at that home after suffering from dehydration. State inspection reports indicate she was in severe pain in the days leading up to her death and that she may have gone several days without water. Also last week, the Des Moines Register reported that in the months since the Interstate 235 traffic camera has been turned back on in Des Moines, nearly 8,000 tickets have been issued. That camera monitors traffic in the eastbound lanes near the Waveland Golf Course, as you know. Last year, a Polk County District Court stopped citations from being issued, but a few months ago, the state Supreme Court issued a ruling allowing Des Moines and other cities to start using the speed cameras again. There were also several stories last week involving Iowa State that made news around the state. One involved a lawsuit. The federal government has dropped a complaint against Iowa State University's handling of a reported sexual assault, months after a judge dismissed a lawsuit about the same incident. The Federal Office of Civil Rights opened its investigation 4 years ago after a female Iowa State student alleged that she had been sexually assaulted and that the university failed to handle her complaint properly. The alleged assailant was expelled from the university, pleaded guilty to assault, was sentenced to 2 years probation, and was required to register as a sex offender for the rest of his life. Another story involving Iowa State had to do with members of a university fraternity who started a bonfire that blew out of control in the final days of their lease at an apartment building that had already decided not to let them come back. It took place on July 22nd when Delta Chi members had a bonfire outside an apartment building on the corner of Knapp Street and Welch here in Ames. Building surveillance cameras showed fraternity members throw a couch into the fire, then another one, and that caused the flames to blow out of control. The fire did not reach the building, but it was close, and a property manager for the management company says windows were cracked and interior hallways smelled of soot. Even before this, the management company had notified Delta Chi it would not offer a new lease because of previous incidents relating to alcohol. The fraternity had been renting out the entire building for the past 3 years, and this year's lease ended July 31st. Another story involved Iowa State's football coach, Matt Campbell, who was being named in stories as a possible replacement for Ohio State University's football coach, Urban Meyer. Meyer was placed on leave during a domestic assault investigation that centered on one of his assistant coaches. Campbell says he doesn't want to talk about anything going on at any other universities. And yet another story involving Iowa State, the announcement that MidAmerican Energy has agreed to pay $1.5 million a year for the next 10 years to have its name associated with the field at Jack Trice Stadium. The playing surface will be named Mid-American Energy Field, starting with this season's opening home game against South Dakota State on September 1st. The stadium itself is still going to be named Jack Trice Stadium. Another big story last week involved the leader of Iowa's 4-H youth development, who was fired on Thursday, 1 week before the start of the Iowa State Fair, which is the focal point of the 4-H calendar. Jean-Paul Chaison Cardenas, who is the first Latino statewide youth leader in 4-H's 115-year history, was terminated. That came months after a suggested 4-H inclusion policy generated criticism from conservative groups. That proposed policy would have let transgender 4-H members use bathrooms, locker rooms, and overnight accommodations that correspond to their gender identity. Policy has since been withdrawn. By the way, the state fair opens this Thursday. And one more note. It was quite an end, indeed, to the farmer's market this past Saturday in Des Moines. A water main broke just after the market closed, causing part of 4th Street to buckle. Police blocked off 4th between Court and Walnut to vehicle traffic. A boil advisory went into effect for 72 hours for businesses and residences near the break. Shortly after that first break, a second one took place on East 12th Street between Des Moines Street and East Grand Avenue. The two breaks apparently were not connected, but it is still a mess down in Des Moines. Quite an end indeed to that farmer's market. And that's quite an end indeed to our summary of the big news from around Iowa this past week. And, of course, Ursula, I'm going to be back here Wednesday with a look at news from the pages of weekly newspapers from around Ames. Hope we don't have any water main breaks.
Thank you, Dennis.
You bet.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg, here together with Dennis Hart. Back in July on Local Talk, Mary Rankin, Ames and ISU Sustainability Director, introduced AOAD Oluluwana, the ISU New Recycling Coordinator. We were pleased to meet this influential new member of our community, partly because he's bringing a new environmental effort to ISU that will change life on campus. Partly because he brings news from the other side of the planet as a Nigerian immigrant, and partly because a number of people at KHOI have begun to tune into the issue of plastic and the worldwide crisis that it is causing, and AO knows a lot about plastic.
And also because he is an interesting voice for a new global generation that's sharing a sense of urgency and enterprise about how to protect the environment in new ways. So, to follow up on all this, you and Mary sat down with AO for a follow-up conversation, and you asked him about where his passion for environmentalism started. He started that by talking about experiencing a flooding disaster in Nigeria and how this led him to see trash and plastics as a global issue. Later in the interview, he explained the concept of upcycling as opposed to recycling and how treasures can be seen in waste.
In 2012, back in Nigeria, there was this huge flood disaster that was very, very devastating for the entire country. You know, you can imagine having constant rainfall for 2 weeks nonstop. You know, it's quite unfortunate that because of people's mindset about waste back in Nigeria, people just drop things wherever they like. So, you know, all of those things accumulated, blocked the drainages. And when we had that rain for 2 weeks, the water had nowhere to go. And, you know, there was this huge flood. And basically, it was very devastating. And the incident was very emotional for me, was the fact that we lost properties as a family. And we even lost some family friends as a result of that incident. So that got me thinking. I had a bachelor's in environmental management and toxicology. And that got me thinking, it's like, you know, we can't continue like this as a country and even as humanity, you know, because nature will always fight back. We are just very reckless to nature, and in nature, whenever it wants to fight back, it does. And that was exactly what happened. So that got me thinking, it was like, we need to start thinking for the future generation, you know, what we need to start doing right now, because we can't continue this way. So that actually was one of the reasons that brought me into the States, to be a good way to, you know, learn what's been done in some of these developed countries and what are the best practices, you know, to actually have an effective waste management system. And that has been my passion all this while. And, you know, moving to the States, I discovered that the university that I graduated from, I discovered that there's a lot of food waste. And that broke my heart. Like, we're just moving from fry pan to fire. You know, so it was very, very devastating. I said, okay, no, this is not a Nigerian problem. This is not an African problem. This is a global problem. And we have to attack this problem. We have to start talking about it. We have to start putting our words to action. And that's how I got my passion around waste management, recycling, and all of that. So based on my background, what I've experienced personally, when it comes to waste management, recycling, it's not about the job. It's just about, you know, the passion. It had an impact on me. Right now, I have two little boys. One is 4, one is 2. They know what is recycling and they know what is trash. Because, you know, I think this, we are talking about their future. You know, we've messed up our own future. What impact can we put on them? Do we want to put that same mindset that we had growing up into them by being wasteful, not care about, you know, nature? Or do we want to start telling them as young as they are what they can do to protect their environment? So that's basically what I'm doing right now with me, with my own kids. And I'm so glad that, you know, as young as they are, they know what is trash, they know what is recycling. And I think that's a good way to start. We have to start from individuals before we start talking about outside entities. Based on my passion, based on what I've experienced in the past, as part of my master's thesis, I lived in a mountainous community in Colorado. And one of the greatest challenges of that place is that we have limited recycling infrastructure. Gunnison happens to be one of the coldest town in the U.S., so we have as much as 100 inches of snow every winter. That actually has limited how much local farmers can grow food. So I thought about putting up my content for the environment. How can I address the short growing season in Gunnison? So I came up with the concept of using plastic bottles, clear plastic bottles, to build a greenhouse for local farmers. And I built a 10x12 plastic bottle greenhouse, which was the first, you know, of its kind in the state of Colorado, to tell people that, you know, we can address those plastics going to the landfill and also solve the shorter growing season. So I'm glad I was able to put all of those things into perspective. And now, you know, I'm not only building that structure, I also develop a manual for any community globally to be able to use such manual. The processes I went through in, you know, in terms of engaging the community, elementary school, high school kids, the university, local farmers, people below the poverty level. So people can see that there's treasure in waste that we throw away. How best we can use the waste we throw away to actually advance a problem we are facing as a community. And that was what I was able to achieve that.
What's holding the bottles together?
So there's a twine in between those bottles.
Twine?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like a wire twine that you just put in between those bottles, on top and downwards. And what I used was clear bottles.
Are the bottles flattened or are they still?
They still retain their structure. So
But they're not a square shape.
No, they are like...
They're round, right?
They're round.
Are the bottles like bricks?
Yeah,
are they still in one piece?
Exactly. It's basically an eco brick. So we're just putting them on top of each other. But what we now did in Colorado was the fact that we used a plastic sheet to wrap it up.
Okay. Oh, okay. So that filled in any of the holes.
Exactly.
So the bottles made the basically structure.
The wall.
The structure.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm. And the thing we did was that because of some of the plastics might start degrading and all of those things, we did it in such a way that it's easy, it's fixable. You know, you can actually go into the wall and just replace that bottle, that line, and just replace it and, you know, have a brand new structure.
So you're able to retain heat with these?
Absolutely. One thing I also did earlier this year was to track the temperature variation in that greenhouse during the winter months to see how effective it is. Mm-hmm. You know, so I discovered that we have about 15 to 20 degrees variation between the external temperature and the temperature inside the greenhouse, which is something good. You know, it's something that I was even thinking probably 5 to 10, but I was amazed, you know, studying that from late December and early March. And I discovered that there was, on the average, 15 to 20 degrees variation, which is good for local farmers in Gunnison. But because Iowa is a little bit different from the climate we have in Colorado in terms of humidity and dryness, you know, one might be able to tweak things around to see, okay, what can we do? The bottom might not be as tight as, you know, the way it was compacted in the one I built in Colorado.
What was the most challenging problem you had to address when doing this?
One thing I actually underestimated was bottle collection.
The collection of the bottles?
Yeah, when I ran out of the clear bottles, I had to be creative, and I ended up augmenting that with 1 liter clear bottles.
So how many bottles?
So altogether, all the bottles I used was, you know, about 1,500. So I call them, I just call them basically plastic bottle greenhouses.
Bottle greenhouses.
Yes. And I tried to move away from the word recycling, because I believe it's more than recycling, that project that I built.
What do you call that?
I call it upcycling.
Upcycling.
Mm-hmm. Upcycling.
Yeah, so is the process of, you know, reusing a product to produce another product of higher value than the original product that you're trying to use. So basically, you know, I call it plastic bottle upcycling, you know, with a case study of a greenhouse.
So we can look forward to upcycling at Iowa State as
absolutely,
well.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm. One thing I spoken with Mary and Bob, which is my boss at Iowa State University, is trying to work with the design department. They have more expertise than I do in terms of, you know, what works best, you know, for this kind of structure, even still using the same materials. That's something I've kept in mind and something I want to explore here in Iowa State.
You have instructions on how to build a greenhouse
Absolutely.
Out of plastic bottles.
Absolutely. I'm putting up a website for that as well. Apart from the manual, any community can access that resource, you know, and tweak, you know, whatever I had in that manual, you know, to suit their current condition and current problems. And that's my goal. And that's, you know, that speaks back to what we were talking earlier as to, you know, how as individuals, as nonprofits, can begin to develop solutions, not just talk, develop solutions to address some of these problems that I went through, my family went through, to secure the future generation from having, you know, such a global disaster.
Are there similar projects going on in Nigeria?
Absolutely. Yeah, because, you know, I think that incident has actually made people to think out of the box and begin to think, how best can we do things? How best can people see trash or waste in a different manner? Mm-hmm. How can people begin to think of, okay, this waste I'm generating, I think it has other values than just throwing it in the ditch.
Are you aware of any specific projects back home in Nigeria?
I know of a couple of organizations that are actually poor communities to start building eco-friendly homes. Out of
eco-friendly
waste. Homes.
Homes.
Yeah. Out of waste, you know, just also speaking to using plastic to build a house this time around, not even a greenhouse. And so basically what that means is that they stock plastic bottles of any type, trash, and with sand, so that it gives enough compatibility for that bottle to be able to withstand whatever stress that house is going to go through. So that's a new trend right now back home in Nigeria, and it's been said that it's going to solve the housing problem in Nigeria. Right now we have about 17 million housing deficit in Nigeria, and I think going that route helps to eliminate waste as much as possible and also educate citizens that there's more to waste than the way you see it. There's more value that you can actually get from your waste. Once people begin to see that, people see value for the waste they generate, it will be very hard for people to generate those waste even in the first place.
This is really a new generation of creativity and a vision that's global.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So are we going to see a bottle greenhouse here at Iowa State?
Yeah, fully. I mean, yeah, absolutely. Because
perhaps I think, in my backyard.
Yeah. I mean, I've done the most tedious. I've never constructed anything in my life. I spoke to expats that have done this in Latin America, in Germany, before I started that project, to consult, like, is it really visible here based on our current condition? And I mean, they provided useful advice and, you know, technical experts, which was very phenomenal. So doing it in Iowa shouldn't be a problem. Basically, I consider weather conditions more friendly than, you know,
in Colorado.
Colorado, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You mentioned that the problem of waste and environmental degradation you've discovered is global, not Nigerian or African. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious whether this consciousness is a global process as well. Do you see this happening in Nigeria? Are you from a generation thinking environmentally?
Yeah, it is a global process. And as a matter of fact, I think that the flood brought up a lot of conversation. Young Nigerians, young Africans right now taking their future into their own hands. There's a lot of nonprofit organizations springing up, charting the course of engaging citizens about the best way to live their life environmentally conscious. By year 2050, we're going to have more plastic than fish. And I can see that here in the United States too. You know, there's a lot of non-profit organizations talking about how citizens should be responsible with the way they buy things, with the way they consume things. I always have this slogan at the footnote of my emails, like, don't buy what you don't need. So these are some of the bits and pieces that we can begin to do, you know, as individuals, as corporations, as institutions.
Well, as you can tell, we've got an exciting future ahead of us at Iowa State. It's an exciting generation that's ahead of us.
Absolutely.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Welcome. I'm Dennis Hart, your host for this hour, together with Ursula Rudenberg. Well, as you may know, KHOI is going to be celebrating our sixth birthday next Sunday, August 12th, a party made possible in part by a grant from the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. August 12th is the date we went on the air back in 2012. Party time next Sunday is 4 to 7 o'clock. Weather's going to be great. There's even going to be shade. It's going to be in the parking lot behind the Ames History Center, and thank you, Ames History Center, for allowing us to do that. And they're also going to keep their doors open that day so partygoers, that's you, can look at the exhibit on Ames High, the last day of that exhibit. There's going to be a live band, the Heath Allen Band. It's going to be free. We're going to hear more from them in just a couple of minutes. Inside our station here on Douglas, a professional silk screener, 505 Press, will help you silk screen our logo on a shirt you bring. So bring a white or light-colored T-shirt or other kind of shirt. Of course, there's going to be lots of great food because that's what KHOI volunteers do. KHOI volunteers always bring great food. And there's going to be even more, isn't there, Ursula?
Last but not least, of course, there will be a birthday cake. In fact, three birthday cakes, I understand, baked especially for KHOI. The cake baker is here with us now. Welcome, Zoe Lee, owner of Sweeter Easy Catering.
Hello.
Hi. And as you can hear, Zoe is a young person, and she's here with her parents, Jason Lee and Jen Lee, who are also in the studio with us. Zoe, tell us, what kind of cake is being planned for the KHOI party? What flavors?
It's going to be unique, and it's going to be two lemons and one chocolate with buttercream frosting. And for decorations, we will do fresh carved fruits for them.
Oh, how beautiful. Fresh carved fruits. So they will be beautiful cakes.
Yeah.
Well, Zoe, you are a baker. You have a business called Sweeter Easy Catering. Mm-hmm. And you've been hired to bake our cake for us. And it sounds like you're going to do a beautiful job. Tell us about your business. It's a little bit unusual. What do you usually bake and who do you bake it for?
Well, now I'm going at the farmer's market. But the business itself is a catering. We can cater for special events and occasions. And, like, if you want appreciation gifts.
Do you cater cakes or do you cater a lot of different things?
A lot of different things.
Like what?
Well, some of them right now are mini 5-inch pies. That's like a personal pie. Like blueberries, peaches, and apples.
Nice. So you cater desserts.
Yeah.
So Zoe, how old are you?
14, almost 15.
You're 14. So you're a 14-year-old businesswoman.
Mm-hmm.
And where do you go to school?
I'm homeschooled.
You're homeschooled?
But I'll be taking classes at the high school.
Zoe, you live in Ames, right?
Yeah.
And how long have you lived with us here in Ames?
6 years.
6 years. You have an interesting story behind your business. Would you tell us the story of your business?
Yeah.
This is Dad. You need a prompt here? Mm-hmm. So maybe she's asking about your story about your food, your interest in food, your passion for food, maybe before you came here from Congo. You want to share a little bit about that?
I am from Democratic Republic of Congo.
And when did you get the idea to have a bakery?
I always been wanting to do business.
Mm-hmm. Even when you were young?
Yeah.
Since you're old now? You wanted to have a bakery when you were in the Congo?
No.
When you came here?
Yeah, when I came here in America.
Okay.
And this is just a small step for, like, I want to have a restaurant someday.
Why did you end up coming here to the United States?
I got adopted by Jason and Jen Lee.
I understand that you send some of the money that you earn back to the Congo. Can you explain what that's about?
Yeah. Since I was from there and I have a great opportunity here, I wanted to support people there because they are still in the same situation I was in. And there is a home that is being built by Mama Rachel. She's a missionary there. It's a home for orphaned disability kids. So I'm going to try to help them there.
What did you experience there? You said they're in the same situation you were. What situation are you referring to?
Well, I was an orphan also.
And did you experience hunger?
Yeah.
So now you're sending money back to this orphanage to help other orphans not have hunger? Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
How does that feel to do that?
Awesome. Because I am helping them and they are the same kids. That's my age and I also need help.
Zoe, what's it feel like to be a business person?
It's stressful. But it's good. Because I like doing business.
What do you like about doing business?
You can plan and you can hire people.
Food is her passion, so I think she enjoys the baking process as well.
Is she good at it?
She's very good.
Yeah, you like
her? She's been cooking for us. You know, really cooking is probably more of her thing. Mm-hmm. But the in-home bakery is really the opportunity to start a business mm-hmm. in pursuit of her dream of owning a restaurant. But she bakes and cooks and has all sorts of gourmet dishes for us on a pretty regular basis.
Lucky you.
So it's really fun, and she's really good at it. So the bakery items, she puts a lot of quality into them. And so she spends, you know, when she's preparing for farmer's market, really spends a lot of time all day Friday. It's all homemade from scratch. And I know she puts a lot of love and just quality into it. She really cares about it, what it looks like, the presentation of it.
Zoe, are you going to be at the birthday party so people can meet you?
Maybe like half a day or something, okay. Because we have a family birthday party also.
Oh, very nice.
Her birthday's coming up on August 19th.
Oh. Okay, well, thank you. Any last words, Zoe?
Well, yeah. Thank you for having me here and for hiring me for the cake and for supporting Sweetery Z.
Okay, thank you. We've been speaking with Zoe Lee, who's owner of Sweetery Z Catering, and she'll be making the birthday party for the KHOI party on August 12th. Come and try out her cake. The party's from 4 to 7. Everything's free. There'll also be great music, and it's going to be in the parking lot behind KHOI, August 12th.
That's the Heath Allen Band playing Mo Better Blues. Heath Allen Band, of course, going to be performing live next Sunday, 4 to 7 o'clock in the parking lot behind KHOI during a free birthday party to celebrate 6 years of community radio. Be sure to join us. It's free. Come on down. And joining us right now, very pleased to have Ames City Councilperson Bronwyn Beatty Hansen, who's here with us once a month and often can be seen at Roosevelt Park on Sunday evenings during the band concerts, like we were there last night.
Yeah,
it was a good concert last night.
Nice to see you there. Yep, yeah. Beautiful.
Well,
night.
Nice to have you here today. And we have a lot of news to talk about. Among them, the first item was going to be, anyway, the discussion of the rental cap hardship exceptions that the council passed last Tuesday night. I was going to ask you to describe it, but you've got some news, some new information about what's happened to that cap exception. What's going on?
Yep, here when just when we thought we were done talking about the rental cap exceptions, it sounds like we will get to discuss that a little bit more. And that is because we've heard from the mayor that he's planning to veto the ordinance we passed in its current form in order for us to come back around and have one more discussion about it. Basically, from the mayor's letter, it's not that he didn't like all of it. It was just the last thing we did was a little much in his mind, and really, according to him, kind of defeated the purpose of the cap.
So let's briefly background, and then we'll get into it. Yeah. The rental cap is a 25% cap that the council has imposed on 7 neighborhoods around Iowa State. Many of those neighborhoods already have far more rentals than 25%, but it's an effort to keep them down, to protect the neighborhoods.
Right.
The cap exception, one of those controversial issues that, again, had been talked about for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And without getting too much, it's complex, it's confusing. What doesn't the mayor like about what you did?
Well, in a very broad sense, I think he feels that with all the exceptions we've put in, that it erodes the purpose of the cap in the first place, that with the exceptions in their current form, nearly everyone, might be able to get an exception. The last thing we did, sort of the last straw, so to speak, was how we handled folks who might only want to have one renter. The rental code is unique in that circumstance. It allows you to have one person living with you, paying money, as a renter would. It allows you to have one of those without having to go get a rental permit. We basically, the decision was that if you had one renter, you could still get a permit, even though you're not required to. And that was different than staff's original interpretation. That was the big change.
So at last Tuesday night's meeting, Councilwoman Gloria Boettcher was opposed to the cap exceptions, mm-hmm. making the point in her mind that if you have an exception to the rental cap, you're essentially destroying the rental cap. There's no reason for the rental cap. You voted in favor of the rental cap.
Mm-hmm.
Explain why.
It's true. Well,
the exceptions.
Well, I think we do have this rental cap in place now, but it is quite a change from what we've been doing. And I like the exceptions because, for one, I feel like they're a pretty high bar to get a rental permit and keep it. You have to do quite a bit of work. So I don't feel like a lot of folks are going to run out and get one because it won't be that easy. And then, coupled with that, while we will be through the exception process if we do agree on something, while we will be increasing the number of rentals in those neighborhoods, hopefully we're starting to do work in other ways, in other programs to bring that balance back to maybe some incentive programs to convert what was once a rental back into an owner-occupied house or, the programs like that would swing the balance back towards more owner-occupied percentage in those neighborhoods.
Council's been talking about this for a year, ever since the state legislature passed the law, which did away with Ames's rental cap. So it's been, I think it's fair to say, a mess for a long period of time. You're starting over now because of the veto on the exception. It's a new discussion requiring 3 passages. Am I right?
Yeah. Yes. I would guess that a lot of the material we see come back will be what we had already seen. So I don't know that the discussion will start, on a clean slate, so to speak. We'll probably use some of the framework that we were looking at before. But you're right in that it'll take another at least one meeting, that we've been through it a lot.
Oh,
so
every meeting for months.
So this might be one of those rare circumstances where council, once we can agree on something, we might consider doing the 3 readings
potentially, you know, at once. Once we've heard the input for the first reading.
One last question on the rental cap, which is going to be ongoing, this discussion, as you're indicating. 25%, with most of the neighborhoods in the area around Iowa State, those seven neighborhoods, way above 25%, some 40, 50, 60, we've heard, wild numbers. Is the rental cap going to have any impact at all? Can it have an impact?
Good question. Well, it'll slow the tide, I think. And then we do need these other programs we need to think about other ways anyway that we are encouraging, you know, the conversion of rental properties back into owner-occupied properties, if we do hope to bring those numbers down in those neighborhoods, yeah.
Okay, let's talk about something else the council did last Tuesday night. First reading, first passage of a so-called Campus Town Self-Improvement Municipal District, something like this, SMMID.
SMID, yeah.
Bottom line. What happened? What is this district?
Yeah, this is a district that is funded. Well, it's a geographic district in Campus Town, and they are self-taxing. So the concept here is that there'd be a property tax. Part of that would go to this SMID. And they talked about the rates and things like that at the meeting. But the idea is that the funds generated by the properties in this area would then go to improving the area. So either beautifying or snow removal, trash pickup, maybe. That's really the use of these districts in other places too. Other cities have them where they might have their, you know, maybe their downtown or, you know, other geographic district, and they raise funds that way, and then they use it for beautification, maintenance, that kind of thing.
The owner of the Arcadia Cafe was quoted in the Ames Trib after this happened, saying, "We really need this because a lot of folks in Ames don't like to go to Campus Town because, as he put it, his words, not mine, it's dirty."
Mm-hmm.
Is that a perception that you have, that a lot of folks in Ames won't go there because of the aesthetics?
Well, we certainly do hear that. I don't know how much of it is that versus how much of it is the, you know, sort of variety of retail options in the area. But, the look of it certainly has something to do with the welcomeness of an area. So I've heard that from folks, but I don't know how widespread that opinion is.
I hadn't heard it put quite that way. You hear complaints about parking and sometimes, how do I say, rowdy students when school is on and Saturday nights in Campus Town and all of that. That's something to avoid for some people. But is this district, it appears to be on a track where it's going to pass. But not every business is in favor of this. Some are really worried about this one.
Yep. A SMID is interesting in that it needs a certain amount of approval from the property owners to even start the process. And they did get that. So they needed 25% of property owner approval, and they got 40-something. But it can be stopped. The process can be stopped with a percentage of property owner disapproval as well. So if they get 25% disapproval, then it requires a unanimous vote from council to establish the SMID. And if they get 40% of property owners in the area signing a petition to stop it, it halts it altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think there is a procedure in place for property owners who are concerned with it. You know, there's always, in any circumstance where you have taxes, there are folks who, you know, believe that you could fund those services a way other than taxes, you know, through property tax. So, you know, I certainly understand their hesitations, but I think overall it will strengthen the area. So.
Well, we'll see what happens with the property owner. Up to them now to move forward, right? After you folks give the okay, it's up to them to see what happens.
Yep. Public hearing process and then three readings upcoming still.
Yep.
So.
Well, as if rental caps and SMIDs aren't enough, there's this ongoing lingering controversy over Lincoln Way rezoning. And the council has passed it now, all three readings, rezoning part of Lincoln Way between Duff Avenue and almost all the way to Grand Avenue, not quite. Gilchrist is where it goes. Still some lingering anger on the part of some owners there who say that you, not you particularly, but the city council in general, trying to zone them out of business to make way for that big Chicago developer. Talk about that.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. We haven't heard much out of the developer lately, so I'm not sure where that is at. But I think some of the compromises we made towards the end of that procedure with rezoning really hopefully helped to comfort the property owners in that area. We define them as pre-existing instead of non-conforming, and that might sound technical, and it is.
Yes.
But in a nutshell, it means that they can continue their operations. You know, certainly no one's forcing them to move or alter what they're doing. They can even expand their use on their site now with the pre-existing definition, so they can carry on in business really as long as they'd like to in those areas. So, I hope that that comforts them. We certainly weren't trying to drive anyone out of the area.
Why was there a need to rezone in the first place?
Well, that area was the first of our priorities after we looked at our Lincoln Way corridor study. So that corridor study was undertaken, 2017 or 16. And it looked at all of Lincoln Way, but it identified focus areas where we could really make a difference in how Lincoln Way feels or looks. And this was the first of our areas to look at. So it was a priority to look at that area, and really, I think it makes sense, as Ames is growing and will continue to grow, that we need to intensify density in the core. That's something that I believe in, as opposed to sprawl, right? If, as a city grows, you need to either intensify density or you sprawl. And so that area of Lincoln Way is really poised for some good intensification. It's very low intensity right now. It could, being right in the heart of town, it could take a lot more population and density, really.
Isn't it in the back of maybe not your mind, but perhaps, or maybe other council members' minds, do you get an image of South Duff Avenue and you say, no, we don't want that on Lincoln Way? We really don't?
I hope so, yeah. I don't want it on Lincoln Way, yeah. South Duff, I mean, for businesses, they love it. Traffic volume is high, so, businesses love to move in there. But nobody that I ever talked to would say they love driving up or down Duff Avenue. I mean, nobody likes the aesthetics of that street. And I don't think we want Lincoln Way to be that way. We want people to enjoy driving up and down it. It's really the core of the town, and we want it to be aesthetically beautiful, too. So,
South Duff Avenue is quite a piece of work on Friday afternoons, even when school's not in. Woo! Getting down there. My wife and I tried to go to the movie last Friday, and we got there 25 minutes later.
Miss all the previews?
Yeah, but that's not a bad thing. Parking rates went up in Ames, and I've heard some rumblings from businesses downtown on Main Street, unhappy because they say it's driving people away, and their customers are complaining. Talk about the parking rate increases and the need for that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I was looking at my notes. Actually, it was November of 2017 that council directed the parking rate increase. Mm-hmm. So it's always interesting, the lapse between when we talk about something to when it goes into effect. Of course, was just this fiscal year, so just recently here this summer. And the need for it was really, we don't make money off of parking meters. We don't make a profit. We make enough money from parking meter rates to pay for things like fixing parking meters and fixing parking lots. And so really that's where we come up with, the need for parking meter money. So that's what based that calculation. As far as the effect it's having, I don't know. I mean, I think there's a period of time that would be reaction time where folks are really reacting to the new fees. It takes some time to let that all settle in. But my sense is that over time, people become accustomed to a higher rate, and what we're charging is not unreasonable compared to other municipal areas our size.
Some folks think we ought to go the way of Nevada, which has no parking meters downtown. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. I think parking meters were established because business owners wanted them at one point in time. The thought being that if you let people park without a meter, they'd take up one spot all day, and so you don't get as many customers. If one person's taking up that spot all day, you don't get the turnover of customers you want. So typically, parking meters are seen as a good thing for business districts because they create turnover on purpose of parking. It's an interesting thought to say, what would happen if you did away with that? Would you have just people parking in one spot all day and then no one would ever be able to find a parking space? I don't know the effect that that would have.
Nobody does, and I'm sure business owners who now are worried that maybe some of their employees have to move periodically, they're complaining about that. But if their employees stayed in front of their business all day and didn't allow customers to come in, they'd be complaining about that one.
Yep. Yeah, and so you have some business owners who want their employees to be able to park, and some make their employees park farther away. It's really a lot of differences of opinion on that one, yeah.
One quick note here. We have about a minute left. Healthy Life Center, $48.5 million fundraising going on for it. How is it going? Do you know?
I haven't heard an update lately since the last big gift that was announced. I'm assuming we'll get an update on that soon. We've been waiting for that.
So. The city's going to have to pass a bond issue in order to help fund this, though, one way or the other. And that's going to mean perhaps a tax hike, is that right?
Well, if the bond issue passed, yeah. I think we're waiting to see what the fundraising results are and then waiting to see about funding from the other partners. That would really guide, you know, the bond issue in terms of how much we need. And
Bronwyn, this has been the fastest 15 minutes in radio. We've talked about a lot of things. Thank you for coming in today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Bronwyn Beattie Hansen, who broke news on KHOI this morning that the mayor has vetoed or is going to veto the rental cap exception, and that's going to royal matters again at the city council coming up. I'll be there.
Should be interesting.
Should be interesting.
I'll be there, too.
Thank you. I know it. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. We've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Dennis Hart, and we've been speaking with Bronwyn Beattie Hansen, a city council member at large. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. And also remember that you can hear it live online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live, and it also is archived on our homepage.
Our theme song, as always, Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Mo Better Blues performed live in Des Moines by the Heath Allen Band. And, of course, that band's going to be performing live and free right here at the Ames History Center's parking lot behind KHOI next Sunday for our sixth birthday celebration. Put it on your calendar. Great music, cake, food. Did I say food? And lots of other fun. Information on the party can be found at khoifm.org. Thanks again to the Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau for a great help and grant to help make this party possible. Did I say food?
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. And stay tuned for Headline News and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m.
And remember that you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening. Did I say food? And we will see you again
on the radio.
On the radio.
KHOI is sponsored in part by Ames Electric Services, providing rebates to customers for upgrading to energy-efficient appliances, lighting, thermostats, and air conditioners. Smart energy rebates help you decrease your power needs, which can lower your electric bills. Learn more from www.cityofames.org/smartenergy.